Why is there a buzz? Okay. Well, whatever.
Is
doesn't
it gone?
Matter.
I don't hear a buzz. No, I hear it now. Is it my phone?
I don't know. Maybe.
You buzzing?
I think it's gone now.
It was probably my phone. It's packed with radiation. This your recorder is also kind of like a Geiger counter.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It's I got it off the internet from the back market. I've never heard of it before, but...
Was it shipped from Chernobyl?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense.
It's one of the ones that they were using all the way back then. It's just an old Garfield phone. Somehow the plastic didn't melt. And now I have it.
We're all very lucky for that.
It's a powerful phone. It receives calls from God. That was I forget who it was, but that was like a thing. This like famous like UFO contactee or something along those lines claimed he received like a call on the God phone.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah. And apparently like a bunch of other people got the same call. Like all people who were like involved in like science fiction and like tech, like later on, like this happened in like the 50s.
Huh.
Yeah. That's one to think about. But now I have it. So I'm working on something important here. But really, what I'm working on is Franco February.
Yes. So Franco February is back for its second and final week this year.
Yeah. My attention was beginning to waver.
So, yeah, welcome once again to the Raincoat Report. This is Boss here with Jeremy.
Yes, I'm calling, joining you from the God phone.
He's called in from the God phone this week. And we're talking a little bit more about Jess Franco today, as we already told you. And once again, like last week, we're dipping into Franco's Sodian over once again.
Yes. Yeah.
And talking about Sinfonia Erotica, or Erotic Symphony, filmed in 1979 and released in 1980. Like very many of Jess's films, this features Lena Romay in a lead role, along with Susan Hemingway, and a cast of characters that I don't so much know, might have seen in other films, but amongst those is George Santos, who plays George.
Yes, discredited disgraced congressman. Also, I suppose, discredited and expelled.
Yes.
Because he was too good at crimes. The only thing, this big issue, is that he just kept doing them loudly.
Yeah, he wasn't good about lying about his crimes. He was just good at doing them initially.
Yeah, and then just kind of laughing it off later. And, you know, I guess we're going to miss him. I don't know. I won't miss any of those guys. I hope they all get Santosed.
Well, this might be a different George Santos. I don't know for sure.
It's hard to say, and if we asked him, he would claim it was him. I can't find anything on Google about the God phone to like give you any more context to what I was saying, so that one's just going to be a mystery for you. It's something I half learned from a podcast 2 weeks ago.
And really, that's the sort of impact that we want to have on our listeners.
I think Philip K. Dick got a call from the God phone.
Okay.
That makes a lot of sense considering where he went later. I know you're not a big reader, but the book Valis is pretty much about like his main character getting like a satellite transmission beam like blasted into his head full of knowledge that's basically recreating the God phone concept.
Okay.
So I think he got the call.
Okay.
Sorry to be talking about the God phone. The only thing I can fucking find on here is that it's also apparently like a neo-pagan term that gets used.
Okay.
Just like you hear the call of like a particular god.
Okay.
I guess to worship. I'm like, that's fair. I wouldn't call that the God phone because it's not like a actual phone call from God.
Right, right. Yeah. Yeah, I don't have much to add, although I have seen film adaptations of Philip K. Dick's work, such as Blade Runner and Total Recall.
You're starting to get it. So it's all coming together.
It all comes together, yes.
Yeah. That's not a normal boy. He got a special call.
Well, another boy who got some sort of special call, perhaps a different one, mm-hmm. was, of course, our friend Jess Franco.
Yeah, he got a call from the secret societies that run the world.
Oh, yeah.
And they said, make a bunch of fake snuff films for us. And he said, I will.
So, yeah. yeah, alongside Lena Romay was Susan Hemingway, who has a film career of her own that I believe only consists of other Jess Franco films, including but not limited to Love Letters of a Portuguese Nun, which I believe we covered at some point, Women in Cell Block 9, Two Female Spies with Flowered Panties. Yeah, so a few different Jess Franco films. And in this one, she plays Norma, a runaway nun. And, well, this is the story of mental health care in the long ago times.
Yeah, it's like a 19th century period piece.
Yes.
About mental health.
Yes.
And evil counts.
And
old marquise.
Yes, and how, I don't know, their bisexuality is startling to people, amongst other things.
It still frightens people today.
I guess that's true.
Yeah, they're not comfortable with it. But, you know, that's okay. I don't know where I'm going.
Yeah. but yeah, this is once again another Marquis de Sade loose adaptation, this being from some of the Justine story, apparently. But it's about how Lena Romay was sent to a mental health hospital by her husband, who seemingly just wanted to get rid of her. And as we find out, he has some nefarious motivation to get rid of her once and for all. And that's perhaps one of the many evil things about him.
Yeah, he's not a good character.
No, well, he is not.
He's not a stand-up kind of guy.
But he's not the only one with secret plans, as we'll find out.
Yeah, we're going to unravel a whole knot of secret plans.
Yes.
To be quite honest, there's twists and turns and double twists.
Yep, and lots of out-of-focus shots and lens flares.
This movie's mostly out of focus, I think.
Yeah. A lot of shots, close-up shots of candles and shots out a window of like a hillside and a castle that's out of focus. And, you know, camera that just drifts everywhere. And it's just Franco. What do you expect?
It's got everything you'd like.
It's a lovely Jess Franco tale, as all Jess Franco. Well, most Jess Franco tales are. And we're going to bring it to you to give you one more week of Franco February before we go back to basics and get real hardcore next week.
Yeah, we're really going to go back to form.
Yes.
We've been drifting for most of this year.
Yes, but...
it's only been about a month, but it's been a real slide.
It has, but next week we're... coming back to America and talking the American dream.
Oh.
And the American nightmares associated with it.
Yeah. And this week, the nightmare, it's all European.
Yes, it's all European.
It's dark and musty and hidden away.
Yes. So we're going to Portugal today.
Oh, is that where this was filmed?
This is where it was filmed. I'm not sure if it necessarily takes place in Portugal.
Right.
It's not really clear. It's just vaguely European.
Yeah, it's just European.
But Stephen Thrower confirmed it was in Portugal, so that's all I got.
Good.
I only watched like the beginning of that Stephen Thrower special feature before you came in and we decided to start recording.
Yeah, I came in and...
He was mostly just talking about Jess's other Desaad stuff before I stopped, so...
Yeah, and we were talking pretty much over that the whole time.
Yes.
Once I arrived, so... Yeah,
but it's fine because we watched the movie and, you know, we're...
At this point...
We're Francophiles and we know what's going on.
Yeah, we've... watched enough of his oeuvre to really get our own hands on it, and we can take the training wheels off, and we don't necessarily need Stephen Thrower to walk us through things.
Yeah.
You know?
For sure.
I can't ride a bike, but I can talk about Jess Franco.
You sure can.
Yeah. If I had a bike, you'd have to leave the training wheels on.
For sure. If I had a bike, you would have to leave the training wheels on as well.
Spend the rest of the Patreon money and get some of those big tricycles.
Yeah, that sounds like a good idea.
We'll just tool around your neighborhood like big boys.
Yeah, we'll have our little tricycle gang.
Yeah, there's a school right up the road. We can like kind of hang out in the playground.
Yeah, and yell at kids when they come by.
Yeah.
Take their lunch money.
And get chased off by parents and cops.
But yeah, let's do a little bit of research, see what sort of tricycles we can afford on our Patreon money.
Yeah.
After we do that, we'll be back to talk a little bit more about Sinfonia Erotica.
Yeah, it's possible they just made the whole thing up. But I think it's just because Google's useless now. Everything's like SEO ranked, and if you're trying to find something obscure, like who got called by God back in the 50s, it's a little harder than you'd like.
So what I've found, which is something that I've heard other people say, is that now if you use Google search, the best way to get results is to type Reddit and then whatever you're looking for, because then it'll pull in Reddit results of whatever it is, and it seems to work a little bit better. You still might not find this, maybe, but I have found it useful when looking up stuff in the past.
What I found, well, of course you type in Reddit and God, there's a lot of, you know, there's some atheist stuff you're gonna see.
Sure.
And mostly they all seem to be from like back in October when everyone got scared that the national, like that alert, the phone alert was gonna turn everyone into a zombie.
I forgot about all of that.
Phones really dominate our culture, so it's hard to find any information about them.
Well, I know that the 5G signals are gonna sterilize us all.
I already had a vasectomy. I don't care.
I hope the 5G sterilizes me.
Yeah.
I haven't gotten my vasectomy yet because I'm lazy.
You live next to like that big like phone tower. Your testicles are probably like whatever's in there is probably not capable of making a child.
Yeah, they have like three tails and just spin in circles.
Yeah. They're just churning around in your balls.
It's like when you get, like, your stomach starts to grumble as you're digesting stuff, except yeah. It's just in my balls. Just...
Yeah. Maybe that's what that buzzing was earlier.
Oh, yeah.
If there was no God phone, then I don't know what else it would be.
Well, with
Sinfonia Erotica.
With that in mind, Let's talk a little bit about Symphonia Erotica. So we open with some shots of trees that are, of course, out of focus as we get our opening credits. We see a horse-drawn carriage rolling down some tight roadways. And in this carriage is Martine de Brézac, played by Lena Romay. Her inner monologue talks about how things have changed since she left, noting that she doesn't know why her husband had to make her leave. She's accompanied by Dr. Louise or something like that. The pronunciation is unclear, because his name isn't said very many times. And, of course, because it's in another language, I'm half paying attention to how things are pronounced.
Yeah, sorry, I accidentally hit a video. It was playing for a second. You probably didn't hear it. You're good.
Is it about the God phone?
It's getting there.
Okay. Anyhow, anyway, her doctor is with her, who suggests that she try to look normal for her husband, adding that, after all, it was the doctor's idea for her to return home. And he adds that she must fight just as he and she planned. So already out of the gate, there's some sort of intimation that the doctor and Martine have some sort of plan here.
Yes.
Her inner monologue sort of meanders, talking about being good and honest, obeying God, and avoiding the flowers of sin. Her doctor tells her that they're approaching and to keep taking her medicine like she did in the clinic, and to have Wanda call him if she needs him. Martine is greeted by George, played by George Santos, the house servant there, who's excited to see her and leads her and the doctor into this very fancy manor. We hear conversations from the past as Martine looks around the house. She's recalling conversations with her husband, Armando, the Marquis de Brézac. We hear Armando telling her that this is their house the first time she was there and how they would live there forever. We hear some arguments in the past where Martine notes that Armando is always gone, and when he's there, he's still distant. Martine is led to her bedroom by Wanda, a female servant there, who tells her that everything is just as she left it. Martine asks if the Marquis, Armando, is home. Wanda tells her that he's out, and he's with that young man he's been seeing lately.
Starting to think I hallucinated a 3-hour episode of a podcast. Oh, I think I got hit with the Valis.
So I think that our listeners who do not listen to our Patreon need to know that the last time that we recorded, we had several bottles of black, we'll call it.
Yeah.
This black vodka that Stephanie's mother had on top of her refrigerator, I assume since like the 90s.
It looked old. It was dusty. We had to dust it off.
We had to dust it off. They were like little travel-sized bottles or single shot type bottles. And myself, Jeremy, and Tyler each had two of these little bottles of it, and it made my stomach feel not great afterwards.
Sure.
I took the first shot and I was like, this doesn't taste nearly as bad as I thought it would. And then when I took the second shot, I was like, oh no, this does taste as bad as I thought it would.
Yeah.
Oh.
It's just Sally. Don't worry about it. Yeah, it made your stomach hurt, and it made me hallucinate a very vivid account of multiple people receiving calls from an alien god through a device called the God phone.
Yes.
So, whatever. You know, we're all in it together.
We are.
So, let's get back into this Franco film. My quest for the God phone is at an end, I think.
Okay, fair enough. So, Martine's told that her husband's out with the young man he's been seeing lately. Martine asks who the man is, and Wanda tells her that she doesn't really know other than his name is Floor, and he's a distinguished man, but not a kind one. She adds that since Martine left, the Marquis has been seeing some people of questionable morality. We get some ultra-blurry shots of some hills, and the camera pans to a close-up of Martine's eyes. She has a flashback to her husband asking if she's surprised to see him naked, or his friend naked with him, adding that he likes his friend's mouth wide open like a pussy. The sound of laughter fills the soundtrack. We cut to Floor and Armando in the woods. Armando's chasing Floor and pleading for him not to make him run. Floor taunts him that he can't catch him as they run through some trees. The men run and laugh until they find a woman in a habit collapsed in a path.
Yeah, he keeps calling. They keep calling each other rascals.
Oh yeah, they do. Yeah. They note that she must be a nun and are obviously surprised to find her just laying out there in the woods. They call over to George, the servant, as they examine her body. They note that she's bleeding and suggest she might have been raped. They decide to carry her home, with Floor and George doing the lifting as Armando just follows them. Back at the house, Martine and Wanda are doing needlepoint together. Wanda informs Martine that Floor has been here for a few months, but importantly, she thinks that he was sent from hell.
Oh, yeah.
She adds that one morning she found him in Armando's bed, naked. When asked, Floor said that he was the Marquise's lover and laughed without covering himself, which yeah. Wanda was offended by.
He's like an incubus.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I can't think of any other fucking songs.
we cut to the nun, Norma, now laid out in bed. Armando and Floor walk in and stare at her. Armando lifts up her dress and starts to stare at her legs and bush, caressing her legs. We cut back to Wanda telling Martine that Floor and her husband are lovers, apologizing to have to tell her. She says the young man has taken control of Armando's will. We cut back to Armando and Floor, swarming Norma as she's starting to wake up. Armando notes that he's the Marquis, a fanatic of hunting young slaves with smooth skin. As we get a shot of them rubbing her legs in bush, he asks what she was doing on his property, implying that she must have been having fun with a young man that dumped her afterwards. She protests, and Armando asks if she wants them to take her back to the convent, or if she wants to stay with them. She reluctantly decides to stay. The guys decide to try her, as they put it, forcefully making out with her as they reach between her legs. We cut to Wanda talking to Martine again about how the young man has dragged the Marquis down into filthy behavior. She pleads for Martine to make him stop. Martine notes he hasn't even greeted her since her return. We see the guys fondling Norma more.
I think, and maybe it's just because we've watched so many Franco films,
yeah,
that this servant woman needs to learn her place and not talk so and not be so mouthy about the affairs of the Marquis. You know?
No.
I'm an aristocrat.
We see Wanda telling Martine that she needs to stop him for her ancestors. Martine says, at this point, all she can feel for him is love. The only voice she hears is his. She asks if Wanda can understand that. Martine's eyes are tearing up as she asks Wanda, "What can I do?" She asks why Armando could have left her alone to send her away from him, leaving her soaking in desire, wanting his skin against hers. We see some panning, out-of-focus shots of the sea and birds, and cut to Martine's room where she's praying for the Lord to bring him to her. She says, "May his wet cock moisten my dry pussy."
You can't talk that way to God.
What if he calls you on the God phone?
Well, then you gotta charge him $4.99 a minute. You know? That's just fair.
Martine continues to plead to God and begins to suck her fingers. She decides she must kneel to him and beg for his love, or she'll go crazy. So we see Martine descending the stairs in a very boobalicious nightgown.
Yeah, it's quite sheer.
Yes, it is. We see Armando and Floor in bed, and Floor is blowing him. Martine slowly navigates the hallways as we hear the moaning of gentlemen. She peers into the room and Armando sits up and calls out to Martine that he knows she's there and suggests that she come in and watch his friend to see how this is really done.
Is this the first Franco film with some like explicit bisexuality?
It's
kind of softcore, but it's closer to hardcore than last week's film.
Sure, it is. I know it's not the only one that I've seen with that, but it might be the only one we've covered on the show with that.
Yeah, he's got a bunch, you know. We'll get to another one, but it just seems like it's maybe one of those things that's more maybe hinted at usually and not depicted.
Well, the thing with Franco is like he has a lot of movies where he doesn't really have men featured very much in the sex scenes. Yeah. Like there's a lot of ones that focus mostly on lesbian scenes or just Lena Romay thrashing around for 20 minutes.
Right. Yeah.
But, so even like straight, sex scenes with guys are more limited than scenes with women.
Yeah.
But, I can't remember what film, but I know of, I've seen at least one or two other films with some bisexuality, if not homosexuality.
Excellent.
But this might be the first one we covered on the show.
At
this point, it's all a blur, really.
Yeah.
Just one out-of-focus blur.
Yeah. This one's for the dudes.
This one is for the dudes.
It's here for the boy. Give the boy a hand.
We need to put the...
clapping. Yeah.
We need to put the rainbow report button on the soundboard.
Yeah.
From our least popular theme month.
No, they all like it now.
It's
been a few years. It's coming back around.
Okay. Well, we'll...
it's called... it's a cult hit.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So Martine doesn't respond to Armando's... request. So Armando yells out that if she's in heat, she should go look for the maid, adding that she consents to everything. So Martine walks off and the men cackle in laughter and go back to fellatio. We cut to Norma asleep in bed, and Martine opens the door to that bedroom and sees Norma there, having at this point, I don't believe, having seen her at all yet. She circles the bed and startles Norma awake. Norma introduces herself to Martine and explains that Martine's husband brought her there. She adds that he hurt her. Martine tells her, well, it doesn't always hurt. Not when a woman does it to you. Norma tells Martine no, but Martine gets hornier and hornier as she caresses Norma's legs, pointing out her soft skin. Norma cries out that this is a great sin. But Martine plunges her mouth between Norma's legs and begins to lick her pussy. The camera pans around the room to Norma's face and then to the doorway where Flora and Armando watch, caressing one another. They then walk in to get a closer look. The men then snatch up Martine, yelling, "Get out, you skank," and thrashing her around. Martine cries out, "Make love to me, Armando," but instead they just sort of shake her. And then at one point I realized that they're apparently supposed to be slapping her, but with no sound effects and the weakest and least convincing slaps ever committed to film, it's hard to even tell that that's what was happening.
And it's probably out of focus too, so
yes.
It probably didn't help.
They drag Martine out of the room and we focus on Norma's face as we hear Martine's screams, begging for Armando to do whatever he wants with her, as long as he doesn't leave her alone. We get close-ups of birds on the water and then some close-ups of statues. Then we cut to Martine in bed, sitting alone. The door opens and Norma brings her a breakfast tray. At this point, I guess she's a servant now?
Yes.
Martine asks for forgiveness as she wasn't herself last night. Norma says she doesn't remember anything but sleeping last night and says that she doesn't understand the apology that Martine's trying to make here.
Yeah, I think they're gaslighting her.
Yes, I believe so.
It's part of their new twisted plan.
Martine says that she's been very sick and asks Norma to be patient with her. Norma says not to worry, she's there to serve her. We cut to later, and Martine is playing the piano when the doctor approaches her. He tells her that her husband called because she had a nervous breakdown last night. He asks if she's feeling any hostility now. Martine just stares forward and plays piano. The doctor tells her that she needs to relax, adding that if she has another breakdown, the Marquis might send her back to the clinic. The doctor adds, "But that's not what we want." He tells her to be strong, take the medication, and follow his plan step by step. He tells her that she still loves Armando, but she has to defeat that feeling. The doctor leaves. The shot focus shifts and the camera drifts to the strings of the piano being struck as she's playing it. We see the doctor leaving the estate, but he's stopped by the Marquis, who wants to speak to him. The Marquis asks some questions. He confirms with the doctor that as part of Martine's treatment that she's not supposed to experience too much emotion or excitement, and that even sexual activity could kill her.
Oh no. I'm experiencing too much emotion and excitement during this scene because the camera does not stop moving. It just circles around and around them the entire time they talk.
Excellent. He asked the doctor if he were unable to control Martine's emotions and it proved fatal, if perhaps he may be charged with negligence, and the doctor says yes. The Marquis tells the doctor it was his father who helped the doctor's father and made it so that the doctor here could open his clinic. The doctor says he know this and adds that that's why he cared for his wife and never charged to look after her for 8 months. Armando says that after last night's breakdown, he's certain Martine will die soon, and he asks the doctor to write a certificate exonerating the Marquis from any responsibility for her potential death.
I don't know if you can get one of those.
Yeah, I don't know. The 19th century was crazy, though.
Yeah, that's true. Their medical practices were considerably more barbaric and obscure, arcane, even. Like, they didn't even wash their hands until, like, 1879.
Right.
They're just like, we're going to touch the corpses. We're going to deliver the babies. The babies keep dying. Oh, well.
Armando adds that he wants to keep this diagnosis a secret and doesn't want anyone to think that he's trying to take Martine's fortune. The doctor agrees and walks off.
Ah, so she's the rich one.
Indeed, it seems so.
We're getting... This reminds me a bit of one we covered last year, The Hot Nights of August.
Uh-huh.
It has some similarities to that where... A twisted man is trying to off his wife so he can secure her fortune, even though he's kind of presented himself as the rich one.
Right.
Which is also sort of the kind of how the Big Lebowski plays out.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. There's only so many stories you can tell.
Right. Martine runs into Armando in the hallway, asking why he's evading her and reminding him that she's his wife. He tells her, unfortunately, he hasn't forgotten that, and storms off. We hear some poetry from Armando in the past about how he's nothing without her, as Martine's staring off in the hallway. We then cut to a dinner table, and the household is gathered around eating. Armando tells everybody at the table about being honored by his wife's presence. He adds, "Today is an important date, the third anniversary of her first mental breakdown." He says that her schizophrenia is caused by congenital syphilis.
Yeah, we were talking about that before the show.
Yes.
And you have that?
No.
Oh. I think I misunderstood.
No, I looked it up.
Okay. Like to check if you had it, like on WebMD.
Yes.
But it said you were fine.
It said that I should probably get tested. But... these days, syphilis, congenital or otherwise, is treated with antibiotics, but in the 19th century, I don't know, I guess it just fried your brain.
Yeah, that's what happened to Nietzsche.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Isn't that what happened to Al Capone? Didn't he have syphilis?
Yeah, he was just afraid of needles, though. We had antibiotics.
Yeah. And then somehow, I think Geraldo got it when he opened his vault.
Oh, yeah.
Capone, that's why he's on Fox News now.
Capone's curse.
So Martine is embarrassed by this revelation and tells Armando to be quiet, but he tells her that he wants all his friends to be aware of her attributes. She asks if he just stuck around tonight to insult her. He compares her to a sweet, soft fruit full of worms. He then pulls down her top to reveal her breasts to the table, adding that any painter would dream to paint these two apples of temptation. Martine storms off embarrassed, and the rest of the table laughs.
Well, like, that's what the Portuguese call breasts, and I think that's beautiful.
The apples of temptation?
Yeah.
Yeah. Armando toasts to his most stupid wife, as he puts it.
Yeah.
Norma.
Let's all toast to our most stupid wives. Thanks, ladies. You're idiots.
Happy Valentine's Day.
Yeah.
We didn't think about how last week's episode was going to air on Valentine's Day.
That's true. And this one doesn't air on any special day.
It airs a week after Valentine's Day, which is on point for the Raincoat Report as far as timeliness is concerned.
Yes. Enjoy this soft fruit full of rotten worms.
Yes, our apples of temptation.
Yeah, but the other thing he said.
Yes.
Before that.
Both.
Yeah, both of them.
They're two apples that are soft fruits full of worms.
Yeah, we've gone bad.
But we're still tempting.
Yeah.
Until you bite in and realize we're just full of worms.
Yeah, we're full of worms and brown.
Oh, yeah. And black.
Oh, yeah. It's just sloshing around in there. Hasn't come out yet.
Yeah, I think weeks later it's still inside us.
Did you piss black at all?
Yes. I definitely shit black.
Yeah, well, we all shit black one way or another.
Norma stares across the table at Floor as he suggestively eats a banana. We cut to Norma, Floor, and Armando naked in bed together. Armando tells Norma she must help them, saying that their lives will be better with Martine gone and they'll be rich. Norma asks how she can help, and the guys explain that while Martine may have been nice recently, she could suddenly turn into a monster. Norma again asks what she can do specifically to help, and they explain that she must help them kill her. They suggest that she taint her food with a strong stimulant added to her coffee or milk. The guys caress Norma, encouraging her, telling her it'll be paradise for the three of them. Wanda, however, hears this through the door as she listens in. We get some random shots of a lamp with a starburst lens flare coming off of it. There's actually quite a bit of that in this film. I think I mentioned that earlier, but yeah.
It blinded me.
We pan over to Martine in bed, tossing and turning, rubbing her partially naked body as she thrashes about. Classic Lena Romay thrashing about.
Yeah.
She sits up and stares and then goes back to pinching her nipples a bit before standing up and masturbating in the shadows. Martine goes running down the steps, screaming for Armando.
Up and down all the sets of steps. This house has three or four staircases that I'm not sure what they're connected to.
Yeah, I don't know.
They just go up and down and then up and down.
Yes. Wanda calls out asking if Martine's okay. Then we cut to the morning. Wanda hops in a carriage and asks to be taken to the doctor's clinic. Armando finds out from George that Wanda's going to see the doctor and bursts into laughter, asking how could the doctor possibly help. So we cut to Wanda talking to the doctor at his clinic. He confirms that Wanda is telling him that the Marquise is a murderer. The doctor acts as if he doesn't believe her, and Wanda essentially calls him a coward and leaves. We cut to a beach full of dirty seabirds. And then Norma, sitting by a pillar, she's approached by Floor. They chat a bit, and Floor talks about how he stopped caring about others long ago. He tells her a story about how his parents used to dress him up like a girl when he was younger, and how he hated it, and then began to love it.
Oh, well, that's good. He overcame adversity to become a kept twink.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
He goes on to tell Norma that he loves her, and Norma confirms that the feeling is mutual. Flora suggests that they take care of Martine, and then the two of them can run away with Armando, but adds that he knows that they both hate Armando deep inside.
Oh.
So we've got, our conspiracy within a conspiracy.
Yeah. And then also the doctor is in on a conspiracy as well.
Yes.
With the husband.
Yes, but also a conspiracy with the wife.
But one of those might be a fake conspiracy meant to dupe one or the other.
Yes.
In
classic Desaad fashion, everybody's just out for themselves and is manipulating everybody else to get what they want.
Yeah. Yeah. This one make for tough note-taking, or did you get it pretty quick?
This wasn't nearly as bad as Deep Throat 2.
Okay.
But it wasn't easy.
Right. There's a lot of...
There's a lot of intricacies, and I'm also trying to read and take notes at the same time, so it's tough.
Yeah.
But there is enough camera drifting around the room and going out of focus for me to have some chance to type.
That's good.
We cut back to Martine staring in a mirror at herself, cackling like a mad woman. We hear Martine's voice talking about Armando taking her to bed and uncovering her breasts, and we see her uncover her breasts as she's talking about it. She talks about his hands becoming violent against her flesh as she cackles more in laughter. She talks about him uncontrollably rubbing her pussy as she starts to touch her crotch over her pants. Meanwhile, Armando walks the hallways, trash-talking the portraits of his ancestors.
Do you think he kind of looks like Ross from Friends?
Yes.
Okay. That's, David Schwimmer, I think.
Yeah.
He looks like David Schwimmer to me.
Yeah, okay.
I don't know if that's Ross or not. I hate that show, and I'm not going to figure out the friends' names. They're no friends of mine.
Wanda has a knock at the door and answers it to find Armando. He talks trash about her body, which he describes as hideous, referring to the last time they fucked. But he tells her that he's not there for that tonight. He's there to kill her. And so he wraps something around Wanda's throat and quickly takes her out. She's dead in like 10 seconds.
Yeah.
As he's killing her, he asks her if she thought the doctor wouldn't have told him what she said. We cut back to Martine fondling herself. She stands up and walks to the doorway and then screams as she sees Wanda's body in the floor. Martine then collapses onto the floor herself. We get more out-of-focus shots of the sea, and then cut to Martine sitting in a chair. It's now daylight out, and the doctor asks if she had a relapse yesterday. She tells him that she did. He whispers to her, "There's no time," and that he heard that Martine had a vision of Wanda having been strangled. But he is concerned because he knows Wanda did disappear shortly after she visited the clinic to tell him about Armando's plot to kill Martine. He asks Martine if she's ready to follow his plans, and she says yes. So in a louder voice, he tells her to calm down and to keep taking her medication. He wishes her a good day and leaves. We hear an overdub of the doctor's voice telling her Armando has ruined her life and doesn't deserve to live. We cut to Martine in bed, largely undressed and breathing heavily. Norma shows up, and we see her spiking the warm milk that she brought Martine before giving it to her.
Yeah. That's how they killed William Henry Harrison?
Oh, yeah?
No. Taylor. James Taylor.
Okay.
They spiked his milk.
Oh, yeah.
Poisoned him. And now he's buried across town.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Martine asks Norma if she loves her, and Norma says yes. Martine sits up and begins to make out with Norma, who lays back on the nearby bed as Martine begins to go down on her. Then Armando and Fleur walk in their top hats. Armando pokes Martine with a cane and asks if she likes him that much.
It was Zachary Taylor. We have too many goddamn presidents.
Fleur starts to kiss Martine a bit. Martine gets on her knees and caresses Armando before laying back on the bed so that Armando can mount her missionary. Fleur watches and kisses them a bit before inviting George to join them. Norma kind of rubs Armando's ass as he's fucking Martine. This continues for a minute until Martine stands up, freezes, and collapses. She's dead. Seemingly.
That's it.
Armando confirms his wife is dead. So Armando, Fleur, and Norma surround her, chanting, "Poor Martine," and laughing. We cut to Fleur and Norma walking through the weird topiary garden, stopping to make out. Armando and George are watching the two from a window in the house. Armando talks about Fleur not having a sense of loyalty or honesty. We cut to Norma and Fleur making out hard in front of a window. And then we cut to Fleur fucking Norma, missionary, as she tells him that she loves him. Armando is nearby, snooping around through the hallways. We see the silhouette of a sword flash in front of the camera, and then see Armando circling the bed that Fleur and Norma are in. He slowly rotates the sword and raises it high above his head before plunging it down, apparently skewering the loving couple.
Yeah, he got them both.
Of course, because it's a Jess Franco film, we don't have any sort of special effect here or anything. We just see him pull the sword up and the camera pans down to show a tiny strip of blood on Fleur's back.
That's all that would be there. It's a very small wound.
And both are now motionless and apparently dead. Armando sits in silence for a moment and we hear his crying and the sound of footsteps. We then see Martine in her nightgown walking through the house and holding a candelabra.
Thought she was dead.
She eventually walks into the room Armando is sitting in and crying. She approaches him. He asks if she came back from hell for him. She tells him that she came to watch him die as we get a close-up of her bush. She kneels down and tells him that he's going to pay once and for all. He asks what she's going to do, and she takes the sword from him. He begs her, "Do it! Do it! Do it!" We see her press the sword against his neck, and then see a close-up of his face grimacing in pain. His body then collapses to the floor. We see the doctor waiting for Martine on the steps. He and Martine caress one another. He calls her his love and tells her everything is in order and he's destroyed her death certificate and will make sure that she's not charged with Armando's death. This is all vague and doesn't make a whole lot of sense, but okay, whatever.
It's fine.
Martine tells him that this was horrible, and he tells her in a few months they'll run away together with her money and they can forget all of this. We cut to some shots of candles with lens flares and the dead bodies throughout the house. Then we cut to an out-of-focus shot and get credits.
Excellent.
And that was Sinfonia Erotica.
Where was the symphony? I guess the whole thing, it's like a metaphorical symphony.
Yes.
Eroticism.
Sure.
I shouldn't be so literal.
I think Jess Franco just sent them a bunch of footage and they were like, okay, I guess this is the erotic symphony or something.
Tape it all together.
Yes. And yeah, so that was Sinfonia Erotica. And this is time for our break. So we're going to take a quick break and then we'll be back to give our final thoughts on Sinfonia Erotica.
everything I know is wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're saying in this article that they didn't poison Zachary Taylor.
Oh.
But I don't know. I think the science is probably fake.
Didn't somebody die, and maybe it was Taylor, from eating cherries and milk or something?
Yeah, that's him.
Okay.
You ever die from eating cherries and milk?
Clearly not yet.
Okay. Most people wouldn't. And they just expect me to believe he died.
I don't know. We'll have to ask Stephanie. She knows about the presidents.
I went and saw his grave.
Oh.
I went there. And,
does that make you an expert?
Makes me an expert at having been there.
Fair enough. Okay.
I saw a cat in the cemetery.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Poisoned or not, kind of a bad way to go.
Fair enough.
I think we can say that, conclusively, that you just don't want to go out from a tummy ache if you can avoid it.
This goes back to the story about us drinking black.
Yeah. We really got it down.
I keep hearing moans from the basement. I think Stephanie's prepping for our Patreon episode this week.
It's not your syphilitic second wife.
No, she's gagged and chained somewhere else.
Okay.
In the meantime, it's not time to discuss that. It's time for
the raincoat review.
So this was another Franco film that we've watched.
It sure was.
It's kind of a variation on the one we watched last week.
In a way, yeah.
And also, I think, Cries of Pleasure. I think that wife had come home from an asylum.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And also, everyone ended up dead. And I think the ending was, just panning around, looking at all the dead bodies.
Yeah.
But,
I think the opening technically was, too. But then the opening was a look ahead at what we would find later.
Right.
But anyway, yes.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Zachary Taylor.
Don't mix cherries and milk, y'all.
Yeah. It's the devil's snack. Now, this film, though, Sinfonia Erotica, which I think he'd already written a better Sinfonia Erotica, or one would be to come.
Oh, yeah.
But this one's it's good. I like when he does a period piece.
Yeah.
Most of the time. This one, I think, is certainly better than the one we covered the year before, Love Letters of a Portuguese Nun.
Yeah.
I think this one's heads and shoulders?
Head, shoulders, knees, and toes.
Shoulders, knees, and tails.
Oh, yeah.
We're mutants. I think he's tossed together a nice little gothic horror period piece here.
Sure.
It's, it doesn't grab me as much as last week's feature.
Okay, yeah.
I thought that one had was overall just a better made film, even though it explores a lot of the same themes, et cetera, probably based on some of the same source material.
Yeah.
As well. Even though it was purportedly the sexual story of O, it was a Desaad film.
Yes.
All the same. I like this one's climate of paranoia and conspiracy that's going on throughout it. It makes for interesting watching.
Yeah.
Trying to keep hold of everything. The themes of bisexuality and that kind of general sort of decadence are, I think, explored better here than in some other films. They're at least depicted.
Sure, yeah.
Which is nice to see. I think that's cool to see that on screen, even though it's hard to see anything in this film for very long.
Fair enough.
Like I said, I like the gothic horror elements of it. It reminded me a little bit thematically of a short story by Charlotte Perkins Gilman called The Yellow Wallpaper, which is about like a woman recovering after a breakdown in like an old country house and sort of slowly going insane and like seeing like hallucinations and things like that. So, okay. There's some similarities to that in this as well, which I think adds another kind of nice twist on the DeSade stuff. I think I would give this one 3.5 stars.
Okay.
I liked it quite a bit, but I do think the direction on this one wasn't quite as tight as I would like my Franco films to be.
Sure.
There's a lot of drifting and going out of focus more than I would care for.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's, you're going to probably get that, so what can you do?
Yeah.
It's certainly a pretty coherent picture. I would recommend it to our fans and friends.
Yeah, I enjoyed this film. It's, I would say it's certainly not Franco's best work, but it's not his worst work either. It's kind of somewhere in the middle of that range. I think that there's, you know, we've covered a lot of, well, we've covered a lot of Jess's material in general, and there are a lot of recurring themes. In some ways, just Franco plays the hits whenever he makes a movie, and he kind of goes back to the same ideas over and over again and kind of iterates on them, and that's one of the interesting things about him. Like, if Jess had only made, like, 15 movies, that'd probably be annoying. But because he made, like, 180 movies, the fact that he will go back to an idea over and over again and take a different approach to it does make it quite a bit interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I appreciated the period aspect of this. Like, the transfer now, this release was from Severin a few years back, and, you know, they admit that this was, like, the only version of the film available at the very beginning, that it was just kind of a print transfer. And so that, this being kind of a beat-up element adds to the visual lack of clarity, but obviously it's a Jess Franco film and a bunch of stuff's out of focus and kind of just drifting and meandering. Yeah, so,
I don't think the print quality necessarily would have improved those aspects for me. But
it wouldn't have improved those aspects, but it still is not helping in the grand scheme.
Right. Like, when the camera was still in focus, things would have been a little bit clearer.
Sure. But it was still Jess Franco doing his Jess Franco thing. Yeah, which,
he's just kind of... There's other stuff to film besides people, you know? There's tables, chairs... Various birds.
Yeah, in the little bit of that Stephen Thrower thing that I watched, he mentioned that this was, you know, one of like three or four movies that he was making at the same time at this point. And this was the most experimental of those movies that he was making. He noted that kind of at this point in his career, as it would be the case for a few more years, Jess kind of had carte blanche to do whatever he wanted with his movies, as long as he was getting those exploitative elements in there that the distributors wanted, you know, a bit of sex and a certain amount of just kind of crazy twists in there. As long as they had that in there, he could do whatever he wanted. And this is one of those examples of Jess just going to town in one of his films.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps not as much as some of the other films that we've covered that are just completely off the rails. This is kind of an interesting mix of something that, for the most part, makes pure logical sense throughout, but at the same time is, you know, just going crazy. So,
yeah.
There's a lot to like here. Lena Romay's naked and thrashing about. Susan Hemingway is also incredibly attractive and perhaps doesn't get exploited quite as well here as Lena Romay was, but she's great. And the cast of male characters that I'm not quite as familiar with, they all do a great job in their roles.
Yeah.
They're cruel and selfish and... Even weird,
great even David Schwimmer does just fine.
Yeah. So, yeah, overall, I would say that this wouldn't be in my top tier of Jess Franco films, but it was a fun one to watch. I had watched it maybe 3 or 4 years ago and had a positive memory of it, but it was also one that I hadn't really thought a ton about since I watched it, and that's kind of where I feel like this is going to land with this viewing as well. I'm going to give it 3 stars.
Give it 3 stars.
I like it. It's not a standout in his filmography, but if you watch his films, this is one you should also watch.
Yeah, especially if you prefer his gothic kind of stuff to more modern features. I think this would be a good one to check out.
Yeah, for sure.
And you should check us out all over the internet.
Yes.
Mostly at Instagram now.
And patreon.com/raincoatreport.
Yeah, always there, every other week.
Yes, this Friday we're doing a continuation of our last Patreon episode where we did a kink roulette and talked about various videos on kink.com. We had some stuff that we didn't cover last time that we still needed to cover, and we added a little bit extra there, so we'll have plenty to talk about.
Pack some more in.
Oh, there was something getting packed in.
All right. Well, can't wait to see that. But next time, when you're wandering your gothic mansion forlorn and alone, battling congenital syphilis, don't forget your raincoat.
Yes, but also make sure you don't set it on fire with your candelabra.
It's fine.
Okay.
It's flame retarded.